B-Pod Studios.
Stay with us and we're going to show you how to take dead aim.
Take dead aim.
The importance of taking dead aim.
Welcome to Taking Dead Aim, a show dedicated to the game of golf and the people who play it in the Carolinas and around the world. Taking Dead Aim is a presentation of RBC Wealth Management and Academy Sports and Outdoors. And now, here's your host, the guy who will grant you a mulligan, but then remind you about it the whole ride home. Ask me how I know. Charlie Nance.
Hey there, welcome back. Once again, we're Taking Dead Aim, presented by Academy Sports and Outdoors. I'm Charlie Nance on Twitter, at @CLT_golfguy. And on a slow week in the world of golf, we take an opportunity this week to look back at some of the more interesting people and subjects we've covered in the last few months. Matt Corey, Chief Marketing Officer with PGA Tour Superstore, the most amazing golf retail location you could ever imagine. Brittany Altomare, a Solheim Cup hero, even in a losing effort. She's a longtime friend of the show and on the verge of really breaking through to the next level on the LPGA Tour. And our friend Oliver Horovitz of Caddy Codes on shopwithgolf.com, reliving his adventures in New Zealand on the uber-exclusive Terra Edie. But we begin with a retailer that has to come to the Charlotte area soon. What are we talking about here? Matt Corey, Chief Marketing Officer with PGA Tour Superstore. So Matt, before we even get started with this conversation, I've got to tell you a story. On the radio earlier this week, I was having a conversation about being with adults, grown men and women, who see the ocean for the very first time. And they revert to being like children at Disney World, I guess. They get overwhelmed and awestruck. Tears begin to flow. Matt, that's the exact experience I had the very first time I walked into a PGA Superstore about 8 or 9 years ago in Myrtle Beach. I could not believe what I was seeing. I could not believe what I was there. It was nirvana for me. I'm sure you get that all the time, though, right?
Yeah, you know, that was maybe more better articulated than any fan I've ever heard. I think I need to start including you in all of my advertising going forward. National TV spots, we'll have to figure that out together, buddy. That was really well done. All kidding aside, we try to create that experience in every one of our stores. We sort of say that we, you know, it's like the early days of Home Depot, when you walk into Home Depot for the very first time and you're working on a home project and you're just like, oh my gosh, you know, it's not a coincidence that our owner's Arthur Blank, the founder of Home Depot. And, you know, if we can create that excitement when you walk in the door and you have no idea which way to go because there's just Christmas, there's, presents for golfers everywhere, then we've done our job. At least we started to do our job.
You know, at this point, the golf retail business has gotten really, really truncated. Here in Charlotte alone, as far as major box stores, we have, you know, Dick's and Golf Galaxy. And that's really about it. We have a couple of mom and pop operations. But for the most part, that's our only option. And as such, our options are somewhat limited. When you go in, they just don't have all the inventory that a golf fanatic like me wants to see. And that's the beauty to me of Superstore. I don't think I've ever walked into PGA Superstore and gone, I wonder if they have this, and not found it immediately. It's like there's nothing that's out there you don't have.
Yeah, that's kind of the point. I mean, if you again, using the Home Depot model, if you come to a store that's got everything to help you play better golf, improve your golf game, have more fun on the golf course, and learn a little bit from PGA professionals or get custom fit by certified fitters who, you know, by the way, we custom fit you for free, and it's just like the tour pros get. And so you can really have a lot of fun. We have people that bring their lunch into our stores and hang out, or when there's 3 feet of snow on the ground or it's 110 degrees outside, they come in and they practice indoors. We've got in most of our stores up to 12 to 14 high-tech simulators that people can play on and have fun with. And so, you know, today in retail, as most of our listeners know here, and most people around the world know, if you don't create a differentiated experience in-store, everybody's just going to shop online, right? They're going to go to
Absolutely.
A marketplace, et cetera. So you've got to create an experience through people and service and great assortment that inspires people to get off the couch and go buy.
And again, that gets me back to you have everything, because so many times before you make, you know, nothing in golf is cheap. We're not going to kid ourselves. And before you make that kind of purchase, you want to be able to try it. And you just don't have that option everywhere. At PGA Tour Superstore, you do. Matt Corey is the Chief Marketing Officer for PGA Tour Superstore. He's our guest taking Dead Aim. Before we talk more about your stores, I do have one suggestion that my wife has wanted me to make to you for years. Are you ready for this?
I'm ready. I'm always ready.
Now, this is from the mother of a golf fanatic and the husband of a golf fanatic, and her best friend is also in that same boat, and they have had this suggestion and this idea for a while. You need to open a wine bar for women in PGA Tour Superstore.
You know what's funny is we have... It's not just for women. We've had suggestions of, hey, why don't you just open like the 19th hole and put it in the middle of the store and, you know, serve cocktails and wine and beer and appetizers, and people will even hang out more.
She also wants a mani-pedi station in PGA Tour Superstore.
We could create hours of enjoyment for all types of golfers and friends of golfers in our store. You know, those things require liquor licenses and other licenses, and right now we're just going to continue to focus on stamping out stores around the country. You know, we opened 6 this year, so we're up to 41 coast to coast and still counting. We're going to continue to grow. So it's exciting, but no doubt there's a lot of other, we're even selling pickleball in our stores now. Pickleball's becoming kind of a big thing around the country. You know, that combination of ping pong and tennis where you don't actually have to move much. It's kind of fun. So, you know, we'll see about the wine bar in the middle.
Well, you know, that's an underrated part of PGA Tour Superstore. There's an enormous tennis section that is in pretty much every store I've ever been in. So it's a market that you've been catering to for some time.
Yeah, you know, oftentimes in the same household, if the same individual doesn't play golf and tennis, at least somebody else in the household does. So they're very complementary sports. I happen to play both, so I appreciate the fact that we have both in our stores, and a lot of other people do as well. So it's nice. It only takes up a small little portion of the store, but it's complementary for the households.
Matt Corey is the chief marketing officer, rather, for PGA Tour Superstore. He's our guest taking Dead Aim. We have heard rumors for years about the possibility of a PGA Tour Superstore coming to Charlotte, North Carolina. We're the second largest city in the southeastern United States behind Atlanta. It's a head scratcher you're not here. Would you like to answer the question why?
Oh, I tell you, it's not if, it's just when. So, you know, I think the key to opening stores, and we've got a lot of variables that go into picking stores, but the key to finding the right location in the right market is just, first of all, what's available. You know, we have to have a pretty big store. You know, in a market like Charlotte, we'd probably open a 40,000 square foot store. So we need a big space. It doesn't have to be first in Maine, but it ought to be, you know, in the right part of town where there's a lot of golf courses nearby and there's a lot of avid golfers and there's like this sophisticated formula that goes into choosing real estate. I'll tell you, we're lucky right now. There are so many options all over the country. A lot of what we've been doing is going into existing markets and backfilling those markets, but we've also opened some new. So Charlotte's on the short list. If you would just personally find us a 40,000 square foot box that's perfect for us with a really low rent, we can start talking.
See, that low rent thing's the key, because we had an enormous Golfsmith on South Boulevard, and when Golfsmith, and you used to work for Golfsmith, when Golfsmith was absorbed by PGA Tour Superstore, I had delusions of grandeur. I'm like, oh, this may happen, but no.
Well, it might not have been the right timing for PGA Tour Superstore at the time, but trust me, Charlotte is a market we could put multiple stores in, not just one. So we could put multiple stores there. So we'll get there. It's just a matter of time.
You talked about the instruction that's available there and the custom fitting that's available there. For someone who is just getting into the game of golf, I'm a fanatic, and I told you I was overwhelmed, but I was overwhelmed with joy at what was in front of me when they walked into PGA Tour Superstore. What do you say to someone who's just getting into the game, who walks in the door of one of your facilities, 40,000 square foot of golf nirvana, and says, oh my God, I don't know where to start?
Yeah, you know, that's a great question. We cater to scratch golfers all the way down to beginners, you know, and even gift givers during times like Mother's Day, Father's Day, holiday, et cetera. So it's a very we try to create a non-intimidating environment for any level of golfer, right? So if somebody's just starting, there are great options for low-cost clubs, and we can walk them through the process. Even if they're just starting, we can take them through a free custom fitting or give them a lesson or two before we get them custom fit. So we make sure that they've got the right clubs for them. But there's, you know, there's all types of clubs. There's game improvement clubs. There's blades. There's low-priced box sets clubs. There's high-end special order custom fit clubs that you know, are again a little bit more pricey, but there's all kinds of options. And you know, once people get the bug, I think that they're going to realize that they don't have to dive in completely if they don't want to with all 14 clubs either. They can start with something a little bit less, continue to play, and then work on adding to their bag as they go.
Matt Corey is the Chief Marketing Officer for PGA Tour Superstore, our guest Taking Dead Aim. And once you make that purchase, we've sort of touched on it before. It's been my experience, there's more than one PGA teaching professional that is on site at PGA Tour Superstore to set you up with lessons. And also your re-gripping station, but you know what I'm talking about, where you change out shafts and grips and all that, the tech center there. It is one of the most vast and fully stocked anywhere you will find, and the people running that are highly qualified as well. They've done some work for me on the fly down at Myrtle Beach when I've been playing in tournaments, and they're just amazing.
You know, it's fun. We even have PGA Tour professionals. I mean, Korn Ferry Tour, PGA Tour, Champions Tour guys, literally the best players in the world will come into the store and say, okay, I need this club bent a little bit. I need you to check the loft on this wedge. I need you to do this. And our guys will do it right there on the spot. There's no 5 days of waiting. You know, they'll take care of our customers. And so, you know, again, people thinking about golf should sort of say to themselves, okay, if whether I'm new or whether I'm an avid golfer, I know that under one roof, I can get everything. At the sporting goods retailers, they don't have all the best brands or all the best products. And they only have like one hitting bay with a little rope across it. That's not the way we operate. We have a wide open, great experiential model that allows people to come test product, have fun, no matter how hot it is, no matter how cold it is. And that's been a big factor to our ability to grow and grow so fast and have such great success, not just our owner.
Matt Corey is the Chief Marketing Officer for PGA Tour Superstore. It's Golf Nirvana. He's our guest, Taking Dead Aim. You mentioned earlier that you're part of the Blank family of business, that being Arthur Blank, famously the owner of the Atlanta Falcons and Home Depot. And as such, there's a huge philanthropic component to PGA Tour Superstore that I was unaware of, but would be near and dear to everyone here in the Charlotte area, as we have one of the largest and most successful first tee programs in America.
Yeah, we are continuing to expand our relationship with the First Tee. We had a top secret meeting yesterday, which I can't tell you about yet, but it's only our relationship with the First Tee is going to continue to grow. We give money and time and effort and host events for First Tee chapters in every single market around the country where we have stores. And that partnership, there's probably going to be some fun news coming out later this fall about how that relationship is just going to continue to grow and expand, and how we're going to hopefully inspire even more kids to pick up the sport, but also learn some incredible life lessons, right? And you take the First Tee, you take other things that we do in our store, like kids clinics. So you can go to Home Depot and build a birdhouse. Now, you know, you can also come to PGA Tour Superstore and have your kids learn the game of golf for free on a Saturday morning. Whether they're 4 years old, they want to color a golf ball, or they're 10, 12, 13, 14, and they want to hit the ball 240 off the tee instead of 210, and they want to dial in their, you know, their wedge game and our simulators. We run the gamut with kids' clinics and helping kids love this game that we love so much.
Obviously, Mr. Blank has been uber successful, and you keep bringing up things and making the parallels to Home Depot. When he's sitting in meetings and he brings up, okay, we do this in Home Depot, do y'all sort of scratch your head as to, okay, I don't know how this is going to translate, or is it fun to try to figure out how we can translate that into the world of golf?
No, you know, his focus isn't that literal. You know, it's really his direction and his North Star is all about an amazing customer experience. So he's not going to get super tactical or literal about one little thing. He's going to make sure we are relentless about delivering amazing guest experiences, and that we treat every single customer that comes in like a guest. And that sets a really high standard. That's difficult in retail, right? We all go into stores, no matter what our favorite stores are, and you usually get an associate in that store that walks by you with their head down. They don't say hello. They don't ask you how they can help you improve your golf game today. You know, and so we are going to continue to strive towards delivering an experience that is centered around great people that love the game of golf, that can help you play better. And that drives a lot of our decisions, and that's been a huge part of our success and our growth.
Y'all, next time you're down at the beach, they've got two locations in Myrtle Beach. Both of them are amazing, one in North Myrtle and one at the opposite end. It's PGA Tour Superstore. And now that I have Matt Corey, the chief marketing officer, now that I have his personal cell phone number, I'm going to be badgering the hell out of this guy because we got to get you into Charlotte. It's been a true thorn in my side for a long time that we do not have a PGA Tour Superstore here in Charlotte. So at least tell me that, you know, you opened, what, six new stores this last year, that in this next year, you're at least going to consider the Queen City.
Oh, there's no question. There's no question. You guys are very, very high on our list. And again, we are actively looking for great locations in every market around the country. And some are small markets and some are bigger markets, but Charlotte's a fantastic market. I want to be up there for the grand opening and you and I can celebrate together.
I said it when this conversation first aired, and I'll say it now. I'm going to stay on these guys until we get a PGA Tour Superstore here in the Queen City. It makes zero sense that we don't already have one. That, of course, Chief Marketing Officer from PGA Tour Superstore, Matt Corey. And when we return, the LPGA's Brittany Altomare, the week after she almost carried the American team on her shoulders to victory, takes dead aim at the Solheim Cup that almost was. Presented by Academy Sports and Outdoors.
BackstageCountry.com, your online home for all things country music. Like most of us, Keith Urban also has a bucket list. You may be surprised to learn what is and is not on his. Text Keith to 45911 to read and learn more about the central theme of Keith's bucket list. Get a link to the story sent right to your phone when you text Keith to 45911. Go inside country music at BackstageCountry.com.
We are Taking Dead Aim, presented by Academy Sports and Outdoors. Brittany Altomare has been a friend since I was her pro-am partner for 2 years in a row here in town when she was on the Symetra Tour. Now she's had runner-up finishes in LPGA majors and dang near carried the American team to victory with her putter at this year's Solheim Cup in Scotland. We had the chance to speak just days upon her return from that disappointment. Brittany, there's so much I want to talk with you about. First off, even though it was on paper a loss for the American side, in a lot of ways I thought it was a victory for ladies professional golf, for American golf in particular. And I think that so many people got to learn who you were and what your game is all about. And so rather than console you, I want to start off by congratulating you on what I thought was a really, really, really good week last week at the Solheim Cup.
Oh, well, thank you. Thank you so much.
So let's start at the very beginning, and that's when you get over there. And I was so happy. It looked like we initiated the pod system, and the vice captain in charge of your pod is only one of my favorite people in golf, in sport, in the world. If you find me one person on planet Earth that doesn't love Nancy Lopez, they need to get off my planet. So tell me about that system, the girls in your pod, and how it was with, you know, a Hall of Fame legend.
Yeah, I mean, I just realized this or last week how amazing that pod system is, because, you know, for somebody like me who's not super outgoing and, you know, I mean, I do okay in big groups, but I'd much rather small groups. I mean, it's a fantastic system because, you know, you're with three other girls that have similar personalities and, you know, it makes the team a lot smaller. So I feel like, you know, you do your practice rounds with them, you eat lunch with them, and, you know, you form special bonds with those girls too. And to have Nancy as our pod leader was very special. You know, she's super funny. She, you know, we had a group text message going, and, you know, she caught on to all the jokes that were going on, and she was always laughing and, you know, just making us feel super comfortable, which, you know, she did a great job of.
You mentioned, you know, the group of girls, and having been around you and watched you out on tour, how many of these girls that were on the Solheim Cup team, and I use that term, you know, ladies, that were on this Solheim Cup team, how many do you really know personally before the Solheim Cup? How many of them do you hang out with on a regular basis? And how does that go for the rest of the team? Or was this really a group of girls, ladies, you know, 12 of you or whatever, that really hadn't spent all that much time together before last week?
Yeah, I think for the most part, I didn't know all of them super well. But, you know, when you're in a team environment like that and you're spending every second of every day together, I mean, you get to know everybody on a deeper level, I think. Mm-hmm. You know, because even on tour, even the girls that are my friends, I still don't spend as much time with those girls as I just did with those 11 girls that I played with last week. You know, I mean, like I said, you eat breakfast together, you practice together, we did everything together. So, you know, you get to know them. Yes, it's a short amount of time, but I feel like you get to know them personally, like, really quickly. And like I said, the bonds and the jokes and everything that you form throughout that week is just, it's so special. And I think that next week when we play in Indy, the girls that are there, I mean, that just bond just keeps growing. And so hopefully we'll continue to go to dinner and hang out together and stuff, because last week was very, I mean, it was cool.
One of my golfing heroes and Solheim Cup putting legend, Brittany Altomare, is our guest taking Dead Aim. I've heard golfers talk about that first tee shot at the Ryder Cup and how completely nerve-wracking it is, and it's unlike anything they've ever experienced before. Brittany, you've been in playoffs for major championships. You've played in U.S. Opens as an amateur. You've had nervous experiences on tee boxes before. What was it like? You were the second match out on Friday morning in the foursomes playing with Lexi Thompson. What was the atmosphere on that first hole like? What was the feeling going through you before you took your first shot?
Yeah, you know, all the veterans are saying, like, even in, like, the Solheim team stuff we had before that last week, that, you know, the emotions that go through you, I mean, it's just everything. And I think they're right, and it's something that you can't really describe, unfortunately, because it's the coolest feeling in golf, I think. But for me, I mean, I was a little nervous, but I think for me it was more of an adrenaline feeling, you know. I mean, it was so cool. We had a lot of U.S. fans there, which I thought was amazing for them to come over and support us the way that they did. And they were sometimes even louder than the European fans, which I thought was really cool. And, you know, they came up with their chants and stuff, and to hear your name being chanted and like, cheering for you that loudly on the first game. I mean, there's literally nothing like it. And it just makes you want to get on more teams, which is my next goal.
Brittany, what is Lexi Thompson like? She seems, you know, a lot of us just know her from her presence on social media, but we don't really, and she's been in the game forever. I mean, you know, I was talking with Ron Cyrak earlier, and I mean, I feel like we've been talking about Lexi Thompson forever, and she's only 25 years old. But what is she like as a person? What is she like off the course, and then what's she like to play, you know, 18 holes of golf with as a partner?
Yeah. You know, Lexi was somebody that, like you said, I feel like I've known her and played with her for a really long time, but I never really got to know her. And it was cool to be in her pod and to get to know her on a different level, because, you know, I've seen her at the golf course and we've played golf before in tournaments, but you don't really get to talk or get to know each other. And she's awesome. She's funny. She's down to earth. She, like, jokes around. I mean, even in the practice rounds, she was very upbeat, lighthearted. You know, she had music playing for the nine hole on her phone. I mean, I was very surprised by that, and I was very happy to get to know her that way, because, like I said, she seems different when you just look at her from the outside, but I really appreciated to get to know that side of her. I mean, she was a great partner. You know, she said to me before we walked through that tunnel, she was like, you know, don't worry about this tee shot, just go hit it, you know, just feel like, embrace it, just hit it. It's just like any other tee shot. And I think having somebody like that on my side made that tee shot so much easier.
You didn't come through in the end against Georgia Hall and Celine Boutier, but I got to tell you, I was encouraged. Because you lost 2-1, but Brittany, I watched you lip out two putts on the back nine that were dead center. I mean, 2 inches from the cup, they were dead center, and they lipped out on you. So you had to feel like the golf gods were going to, you know, give you a little bit of satisfaction a little bit later on in the day. And sure enough, they did. What an unbelievable match that afternoon.
Thanks. Yeah. You know, Nellie and we didn't really get off to a super good start, like you said. I mean, I looked at a few in my morning match, and then it kind of continued into the afternoon. I had a putt save par on a par 3, I think it was the fourth hole or something, and it literally did more than a 360 around the cup. I was like, you know, I'm hitting my putts where I want them, at the speed I want them, you know, eventually they're going to fall. And eventually they did. So it was nice that Nellie and I could come back from four down. I definitely did not want to lose two matches in a row, so to get back to all square, I mean, it was huge for me, but it was also huge for the team.
Yeah, no, it was an awesome, awesome finish. The Korda sisters seem to be having an unbelievably good time throughout the whole Solheim Cup experience. I mean, if anyone did not look nervous, it was Jessica and Nellie Korda. Are they similar in personality, or are they different? What is your experience with them?
I think a little bit of both. I mean, they're both pretty funny. They joke around and stuff. But they also are different, I think, at the same time. You know, I mean, but it's amazing how close they are, and it was nice to see it. I mean, they play alternate shot. I mean, they killed it in the alternate shot together. I mean, and like Jess kept saying, like, there's nobody that knows each other's games better on that team than they do, and I think that was a very smart move by Julie to put them together for alternate shot because they're just so comfortable with each other.
Brittany Altomare is an absolute putting icon and Solheim Cup player, and she is our guest taking Dead Aim. You mentioned about alternate shot. I wanted to ask you about that. It's one of my favorite formats to play with certain people. I love to play it with my son because we know each other's games so well. I have a really good friend, and we play it very well. But in both instances, our games are very different. Do you think it's better for alternate shot to have the same kind of game, or, you know, not so much?
I think it could go either way. I mean, you know, Lexi and I obviously have very different games.
Yeah.
You know, I stepped in the first two with my pod, and I was laughing because I said, well, I'm definitely the shortest hitter by a mile on this group. And I think Nellie's caddy goes, it's okay, you put like Jesus. So, I mean, you know, in that golf course, it kind of set up where there really was a strategy for alternate shot, because if you had teed off on the odds, you were driving the ball more and putting more, whereas if you teed off on the evens, you were hitting way more approach shots. I mean, I ended up playing the odds, and I didn't get to hit an approach shot till number 8. So I actually think that that golf course set up for best ball where two games might be different. So, you know, because to me, Lexi is a phenomenal iron player. And, you know, I don't think it really bothered her hitting my drive because she was still hitting shorter clubs than most people would hit into, because the course was playing long and it was playing wet. So, I mean, I think it all depends on the golf course, to be honest with you.
You mentioned hitting approach shots and not having one until the 8th hole. I was playing an alternate shot with my son at Mid Pines earlier this summer, and we were rocking and rolling along pretty good, and then all of a sudden, he hadn't had to hit like a wedge in 7 or 8 holes, and all of a sudden, he had a feel wedge shot, and it, you know, it threw him off. Is that tough for you guys as well? It's hard to get in a rhythm sometimes playing alternate shot because you're literally not playing some shots that you normally would on a regular basis.
Yes and no. I think, you know, I tried to just, I told my caddy, and because they would help each other with yardages and stuff, and so I would just want to know, like, you know, what's her yardage into the hole. So I would try and stay thinking throughout the whole time so that when it was my turn to hit an approach shot, I was already kind of thinking that way. But, I mean, it is hard, you know, and I'm sure it was hard for Lexi, you know, because she wouldn't putt for a while, and then to get the speed right on the putt that she had was probably hard as well. So, I mean, but it's fun because I think, you know, it's the truest form of team golf in golf that there is. And I think that's what's most fun about alternate shot.
Brittany Altomare is our guest taking Dead Aim from the Solheim Cup, and she's my golfing hero. You sat out the Saturday morning foursomes. It seems like everybody sat out a match, so, you know, that's just what you need to do. You probably needed the rest, especially after the emotions of that Friday afternoon match. But you came back Saturday afternoon in the four ball, yet another new partner playing with Annie Park, and got a point for the team, a big one against Suzanne Pettersson and Ann Van Dam, two players who were great for Europe in the Solheim Cup this time.
Yeah, that was a lot of fun playing with Annie. I've known Annie for a really long time because we're both from the Northeast, so we grew up playing junior golf together. And Annie and I worked really well together. We you know, when I wasn't playing great during the game, she was playing great. And then when I was playing great, she, you know, so I thought we hand and egged it really well. And, you know, obviously we came out with a win, which is really exciting.
A lot of people talk about the team room at these team events, whether it be with the men, the President's Cup or the Ryder Cup, and with you, the Solheim Cup. Going into that team room on Saturday night before the Sunday singles, I think in a moment of honesty, if they'd have told you guys the previous Monday morning, hey, look, by the time we get to Saturday night, it's going to be 8-8 heading into the singles, you guys would have taken it and said, let's go ahead and play this. What was the atmosphere like in the team room that night? What were some of the things that are going to make it special for you remembering that?
Yeah, I can't really remember, but I just remember, you know, everybody was really excited because I thought we had pretty good momentum going into Sunday. You know, Danielle made that putt on 17 to close her match out, and Amy and I, you know, closed our match out on 18, and I thought we had pretty good momentum going into Sunday, but we all knew that it was going to be close. I mean, both teams are playing phenomenal golf, and it had to be close, and you know, for it to end the way that it did, yeah, it was a very tough loss for us. But, you know, at the end of the day, you know, Suzanne made a fantastic putt in the last hole, and, you know, that match was close all day. And like I keep saying, we all knew it was going to be close, so...
Brittany, I want to ask you about Sunday. Two things in particular. First, your singles match. And I sent you a text after it was over. I was like, oh, my God, 5-4. That's what I'm talking about. That's getting it done. Was that almost a surreal thing for you for this to be your first Solheim Cup, your first singles at the Solheim Cup, and you just went out? And, I mean, you didn't just win. You won with an exclamation point. That had to feel fantastic.
Yeah, I was thinking that I got and I had to make a lot of birdies. You know, like I said, everybody was playing well, and I did that. And to be honest with you, like, all three of my matches before that went to 17, 18, and I just wanted to close my match as fast as possible because I felt like I had played a lot of holes. But, you know, Julie said in the team room on Saturday night, she was like, you know, if you get up, you can't get comfortable. You know, you have to keep pushing, which, you know, Asa and Charlie were 4 up on Nellie and I, and, you know, we came back and tied them. So, you know, I just kind of kept that in the back of my mind, just, like, keep pushing. It's not over till it's over. So I just tried to keep pushing, and, you know, I was lucky enough to close it out on 14.
Get you out of here on this. Solheim Cup player, my golfing hero, and putting icon, Brittany Altomare, is our guest taking Dead Aim. It was nerve-wracking on TV in the States. I can't even imagine what it was like for you guys. I don't know if I've ever seen a match that literally flip-flopped from one side to the other in less than 15 minutes. In less than 15 minutes, the Bronte Law and Allie McDonald match flipped, and then you had what happened with Marina and Suzanne, and it was over. I mean, I was sitting there going, we got this thing won. Holy cow, if we could just, you know, if Allie can just have this par three with Bronte, it doesn't matter. We're going to go 14-14, and we're going to retain the cup. And then it flipped, and it happened so fast. I don't know. It had to be overwhelmingly deflating, yes?
Yeah, it definitely was. You know, it's hard when you're there because I feel like on TV you get to see more than what we do. And I was following Allie's match, and, you know, that was going back and forth. And so I didn't really know what was going up on 18. I was with our assistant captain, Wendy. And, you know, they have radios, and they're radioing back and forth. And it was like, you know, Marina hit it to 12 feet above the hole. Suzanne hit it to, you know, 8 feet, blah, blah, blah. So, and I was getting the updates as they were on the radio, but I was following Allie's match. So, yeah, it all happened really quickly. And I saw we were on 17 green when Allie finished, and we turned around, and Suzanne was about to putt. So, yeah, it just all happened so quickly. But, you know, like I said, it was going to come down, you know, one hole or one putt because, you know, everybody was playing so well, and it was just so close all week.
Yeah, get you out of here on this. This was something that I mentioned. We talked with Ron Cyrak earlier, and he mentioned this, and I kind of got the vibe watching this as well. We're so used to watching the blood and guts of the Ryder Cup, and there's been some testy Solheim Cups in the past. There was I don't even know if this is the right term, Brittany. There was such a congenial feeling of respect between the two teams that, and even though, you know, you lost, it was as if both teams kind of sensed that what you guys did last weekend, I think, was really good for the ladies' game. And it was almost as if both teams kind of celebrated in a way. Am I reading that correctly?
Yeah, I mean, we all know that what happened last week was amazing for women's golf. But, you know, at the end of the day, we did lose, and, you know, it was a bit, I don't really know the words to describe it. It was a deflating feeling a little bit, you know, at the end. But, you know, I think the next day when I woke up and I saw all the tweets about, you know, how great this was for women's golf, like, I realized, you know, at the end of the day, it was something special that happened last week, you know, win or lose. But, you know, obviously you always want to win. So
I'm telling you, this is the year that Brittany Altomare becomes one of the names on everyone's lips when it comes to discussing American golfers having success on the LPGA Tour. And up next, Oliver Horovitz, host of Caddy Codes on ShopWithGolf.com, takes dead aim at his boondoggle to New Zealand and the amazing Terra Edie Golf Club. Presented by Academy Sports and Outdoors.
BackstageCountry.com, your online home for all things country music. Like most fans of country music, we're excited to learn that Luke Combs was back in the studio working on his next album. We've come up with our list of iconic Luke Combs music videos. Yes, Lovin' On You made the cut. Text Luke to 45911 to see if your favorite made the list on BackstageCountry.com. Text Luke to 45911 and we'll send the link straight to your phone.
Taking Dead Aim, presented by Academy Sports and Outdoors. Oliver Horovitz is a former caddy at St. Andrews, lifelong golf fanatic, and host of Caddy Codes on ShopWithGolf.com. He joined us a few months ago to relive his episode in New Zealand at the amazing Terra Edie Golf Club. Again, look, the last time we talked, we were about to play the Open Championship at Royal Portrush. You had filmed this unbelievable sequence of playing golf at Royal Portrush. I was falling in love with Royal, and I figured there's no way Ollie could talk these people into paying for a better boondoggle than Royal Portrush. And I am loud wrong in that one. You went to literally the other side of the world. First, let's talk about New Zealand before we get to the specifics of where Terra Edie is.
Sure.
People need to understand, just because New Zealand is next to Australia, it's not like you could swim across the water. It's a good distance away from Australia. So really, New Zealand is as isolated in a way as Australia is. And New Zealand's not just one island. It's a series of islands, correct?
That's right. North Island, South Island. And we were up in the North Island for this part of Caddy Codes. It's also, you know, it's very different than Australia. I tend to think of Kiwis, New Zealanders, as the Canadians to the Australians. They're Canadians and Australians are like Americans. So Kiwis, a little quieter, super nice, and very surprised when they see Americans visiting.
Now, have you been to Australia to play golf or to caddy before?
Oh, a bunch of times. Yeah, I did some book talks in Melbourne at Kingston Heath. I got to play Royal Melbourne, Kingston Heath, Royal Adelaide. I did a book talk there. It's beautiful.
Well, that was going to be my question, because I know they're playing the Ryder Cup, or their President's Cup, rather, again at Royal Melbourne, which is regarded as one of the best courses in the world. How does the topography, the golf at, say, Royal Melbourne and on that coast, compare to the golf in New Zealand?
Good question. It's so different. You know, Royal Melbourne, Kingston Heath, Royal Adelaide, it's like sandbelt golf. So it's like, how would I best describe it? You're putting on the green, on any green there, and the ball can just fall right into a bunker.
Oh, jeez.
Right on the green. It's beautiful. You know, actually, when the Olympics were in Rio, you remember that in 16?
Right.
That course was designed to be an Australian sandbelt-esque course. So it's different. In New Zealand, you're playing at something like Terra Edie or at Jack's Point, which is down in Queenstown, the South Island. It's like what you think a golf course designed in fantasy golf or golden tee golf would look like.
Well, that's what I wanted to get to. Ollie Horovitz is the host of Caddy Code. You can watch it at shopwithgolf.com. He's our guest taking dead aim. You open at Terra Edie with coming in by helicopter. So let's start first. Where do you have to fly into?
You got to fly into Auckland.
Okay.
Then you take a drive up an hour to Mangafai, which is an hour north of Auckland. But if you're playing Tara'iti, you're likely taking a helicopter.
Yeah, it was insane. But you're right. The aerials look like something that would be in a video game. No one would design it like this.
Yeah.
Tara'iti looks like an amazing piece of property. The guy there, Rick Kane, is it safe to say Rick Kane is to Tara'iti as, say, Mike Kaiser is to the Bandon Dunes property?
Oh, that's a great comparison. Yeah, he first was there in '96. He's an American guy from L.A. And he fell in love with New Zealand in 96. And then in 15, he opened up this golf course. Tom Doak designed it. And initially, it was just going to be for his buddies. Isn't that crazy?
Oh, that's how you know you have stupid money.
Right.
If you build a golf course in the middle of nowhere that it takes a helicopter to get to, and you don't care what it costs to maintain it, you're just building it for your buddies.
Yeah, we're not worried about Rick. I think he's not looking at the price of green fees these days.
The ends are meeting for Rick.
So he opens up the course, and then he's like, wait, we gotta share it with more people than just a few. And so it has this... I think it's a tiny club. It might have 50 members, 80 members, something like that. I actually got to play it a couple years ago, even before we filmed the episode. I played it in 15 when it hadn't even opened yet.
Wow. Now, to try to give people a visual as to what this looks like, and again, go to shopwithgolf.com, Caddy Codes. It's the Tara, T-E-R-A-I-T-I, Tara'iti episode. But the aerials, the visuals, it looks like a combination to me of desert golf like you would see aerial in say, Arizona or Vegas, mixed with what we see here in Pinehurst in the Sandhills. And then throw in some Lynx golf from Scotland and Ireland. If all of that got shaken up in a bottle and tossed out, that's what Tara'iti is.
That's perfect. Yeah, I also like to say, like, maybe Stream Song. Like, put Stream Song in paradise, and there you go. You got Tara'iti. You have to see it to believe it. It's just so beautiful.
So,
it's in paradise, literally.
So right now, is there just the golf course there, or is there a hotel there? Is there planned for a resort? I heard in the episode that you said with Kane that Rick was looking to build a couple of more courses.
Yeah, so there's nothing up there. It's a tiny little town. And you're going up there for the golf. And at the moment, if you go play the course, you'll stay on property. And they have, I think, 8 lodges. And each lodge is named for the course of the sun making its way over the earth in the Maori names of it. And you stay on property. It's very low-key. Everyone there is probably, incredibly wealthy and incredibly powerful, but you'd never know it because no one talks about that stuff there. It's just very low-key the whole time. And the course is incredible, and you're just it doesn't get any better. But you're right. He's going to open 2 new courses, I think, in the next couple of years, and both of those are going to be public access. But the big thing that they do at the club is, even though it's a private club, Tara'iti, anybody can play it once. That's the rule that Rick made. Anyone has a chance to play it one time.
I love the fact that, and I don't know if this was planned or not, it probably was, but if it wasn't, it had to be a hell of a coincidence. When all of a sudden 2005 U.S. Open champ and New Zealand native Michael Campbell all of a sudden shows up.
No, that was totally random.
Are you kidding?
Yeah, he was just there. I knew he was going to be there. And I mentioned to the director of golf, who's a buddy of mine, Paul Reed. He's the guy who hits a 350 at some point in the video. I was like, hey, would he ever want to do the video? He's like, yeah, we'll see what happens. And then he literally played into us, and he just jumped into the video for 10 seconds. It was amazing.
That is so sweet. Oliver Horovitz is the host of Caddy Codes. Shopwithgolf.com is the website. He's our guest taking Dead Aim. I always like it because of who you are and the time you spent at St. Andrews, that you always go and check out the caddy situation. There were 3 things about the caddy situation at Tara'iti that caught my eye. Number 1, we need to upgrade the facilities at the Caddy Shack. It looked to me like the same place that Hawkeye and Trapper were doing surgery in Korea on MASH. That was brutal for a course that's that nice and that exclusive. I mean, come on, that was like Boy Scout camp. That was a tent.
Maybe this interview is going to be becoming a mansion with a private chef.
The other thing is, for a course that's obviously, it doesn't look to me to be getting a ton of play on a daily basis, just on the idea of what it takes to get there. To say that they have 100 caddies at various times working there. That seems like an awful lot to me, Ollie.
Yeah, I think that'll be the high point. That'll be for events and tournaments and stuff. And I think on the whole, you got a core of 30 caddies. But when they're not caddying, Charlie, they go surfing.
Wow.
They literally surf in between rounds. Does it get any better than that?
Well, yeah, it does, because I don't know if you've examined what's in the water over there, but that's where Jaws lives and plays.
Good point.
I'm better off caddying and staying in the mash tent. looking at the golf course, again, we said what it resembled visually, but it also appears to me not to have a whole lot of elevation. In fact, it looked, I don't know if it was just the way it was shot, but it looked as flat as East Texas.
No, that's right. There's a couple elevated grades, but on the whole, you're right. Very flat.
And with no trees anywhere in sight, there's going to be wind everywhere. What is the soil like? What is the way the course plays? Can it be as hard and as fast as what you're used to in Scotland and Ireland? Or
it plays like you're in Scotland. It really does, which is extra cool because almost all the caddies have caddied in Scotland at some point. Most of them at King's Barns, but a couple on the Old Course. My buddy Mitch, who caddied in the Old Course for 3 years, he caddies there. So the caddy in your bag guaranteed will have done some caddying in Scotland for at least a couple seasons. But you can play all those links shots around the greens. You can putt from 50 yards out. You can do the bump and run all day long. Totally plays like you're on the Old Course or at King's Barnes or anywhere around there. And it does get super windy. It gets, can blow up to 20, 30 miles an hour. So, you're in Scotland, but you don't really have the rain. You just have sunny and 80 every single day.
Now, you mentioned the cat from King's Barns, and he's in the video, Terra Eater video. For someone to, it's not like you can, catch the 2 o'clock bus from, Scotland to New Zealand. This takes commitment. What sort of guarantees do these guys have to uproot and, quit caddying at the Old Course and at King's Barn, where you can do okay? It takes a leap of faith to all of a sudden go out to this place.
Well, that's a good point. I mean, one thing you have going for you if you're caddying in Scotland is your caddy season in Scotland is going to be from about April to November. And then starting November, there's a winter list for the Old Course, but if you're on that winter list, you're looking at one round a month, and you might be caddying in snowfall at one point. There are requests during December, if you can believe it, but it often will just be like you're going into the perfect storm, the movie, if you're going out for a caddy round.
Right.
So the winter obviously is flipped in New Zealand because in the southern hemisphere, so it works out really nicely with the caddy season in Scotland. It kind of flips it beautifully. So a lot of guys will do a season in King's Barn, a season on the Old Course, and then you get over to New Zealand just in time for their high season because December is like midsummer. I'll tell you the one thing, though. If you're caddy there or you play golf there, you better put some sunscreen on because you will get sunburned in places you never thought possible. In between your fingers, in between your toes. You will see guys walking around in those amazing, those amazing cricket hats, the really wide-brimmed hats. And things of sunscreen that are like gallon tubs of sunscreen. Everyone seems to have one.
Wow.
In Australia, for example, they won't even sell you, if you're at an outdoor pub, they won't even sell you pints of beer. They sell them in what's called schooners, which is like a half pint, because the beer won't stay cold enough to drink if it's in a pint.
Oh, that's crazy.
That's all you need to know.
Oh, God. Oliver Horvitz, host of Caddy Codes. ShopWithGolf.com is the website, is our guest taking Dead Aim. In addition to the Tarahiti episode, I'm very pleased to see this. With all the years that you spent caddying at the Old Course, I'm sure you get asked all the time for Ollie's caddy tips. And I think these are magnificent. In fact, these are good for anyone who's playing in a pro-am, anyone who's playing in a tournament, a corporate tournament event. Listen to these. Read these. These are all fantastic tips. I'm not going to go through all of them, but there's a couple that definitely bear repeating. When in doubt, if you are reading a putt and it looks pretty straight, look at the damn cup and see where it's tilting. It's a dead giveaway. Do not spend 20 minutes reading these putts.
That's from my friend Patrick McGinley, Irish caddy on the Old Course with me from when I was 18 years old. He taught me that trick when we were both 18. So that's from a couple of years ago.
And this is a big one, too. And, it's funny. I mean, knock on wood, I'm I'm a very low handicap golfer, and I look at bunker shots as the easiest shots in golf because it's the only shot you don't have to hit the ball first.
Sure.
I can hit the big ball first every time, so I don't ever think about bunker shots, but I do realize and do recognize that, you know, there are people who are paralyzed with fear once they get in the kitty box, and you have a couple of good tips there. What I wanted to ask you is, when you're caddying on the old course, and let's just throw out, let's go to hole number 17. Let's go to that sweet little bunker right there. What is the most amount of shots you've ever seen a person attempt to get out of that bunker before they finally just said, you know, a couple of cuss words and tossed the ball out?
Probably 10.
10!
The reason that bunker is so famous for a million reasons, but one of the infamous events was in 1978, I believe, Tommy Nakajima is en route to becoming the first ever Japanese golfer to win a major. And he's tied for the lead, I believe. And he's on the green in two, in the third round of the Open Championship, tied for the lead. He putted into the bunker with his birdie putt, and he made a 9. And my friend Colin Gerard was 15 then, sitting on the grandstand watching. His best buddy, who's also 15, is caddying for Tommy Nakajima. He just picked him up as a local caddy. And Colin's watching his buddy caddying for who he thinks is going to win the tournament. And then 17 happens. Tommy Nakajima comes out of the bunker, finishes out the hole, looks at his caddy, and just says, "I'm sorry." And every Japanese golfer since, every time I'm caddying for a Japanese golfer, they only care about one thing. They say, "Oliver, where is Tommy's bunker?"
Oh, my gosh.
Yep, the sands of Nakajima.
That's so great. Oliver Horovitz, host of Caddy Code, shopwithgolf.com is our guest, taking Dead Aim. We're talking about his caddy tips that are posted right now. This is a big one. And this, everyone, listen up on this. On your second shot into par fives, okay, keep the 3-wood in the bag. Unless you are a good 3-wood player and you have a chance to actually put it on the green, put that 3-wood in the bag because it causes more harm than good 90% of the time. You will score so much better if you will just hit like a 7 or an 8 iron and then a wedge or something in. Am I right on this?
I'm so glad you brought that up because I've seen it cause so much harm. Everyone just thinks they got to reach for that 3-wood even if they're 280 out and they're not getting to the green. Like, why would you do that? It just hit something that you're comfy with. I've seen everybody hit that 3-wood who shouldn't be, and I've seen it absolutely just, you know, tomahawk scores on par fives.
There's another one that's great, too, and I've had this repeated to me by more than one pro, both on the ladies' tour and on the men's tours playing in pro-ams.
Yep.
I ask them what one of the number one thing is that guys do, their biggest mistake, you know, amateur golfers on the golf course.
And it's mainly guys. I know where you're going with this. Keep going.
They underclub.
Oh, yeah.
At one time in their life, they hit a 9-iron 155 yards. They think that they can hit that 9-iron 155 yards every time, and they can't.
And they were probably downhill, downwind on
that
shot. And they forgot about it. When I was doing the interview with Steve Williams for that episode of Caddy Codes, he gave me that same exact tip. He said the same thing. That's the number one mistake I see handicapped golfers doing. To all the listeners out there, just I've caddied a lot of rounds. I'm not a pro, but I've caddied a lot of rounds. I've seen a lot of good golfers play, and I've seen a lot of patterns. The next time you go out and around, do this as a thought exercise. Every single approach shot to a pin that's not a back pin, it's a middle of the green pin or front pin, pretend that the pin is 10 to 15 feet behind where it is and attempt to finish 15 feet past the pin on every single approach shot. Do it for one round. I guarantee you, you're going to play better just with that club option. Isn't that true?
Absolutely.
And I never do it. I should take my own advice, but it's absolutely true.
No, I mean, I see it all the time, and I cringe. I'm like, oh, God, here it comes. You know, man,
Really do it, and your buddy does not care what club you hit into the green. He really doesn't. Try this tip where you tell yourself this whole round just once, I'm going to try to finish 10 to 15 feet past the pin. If I finish pin high, I failed. That's not what I was trying to do. Just do it. And as you know better than anyone, Charlie, like the hazards are often, the bunkers are often cut to penalize short.
Yes.
You know, long is usually okay. And the old course, with a couple exceptions, like number 11, like number 17, besides that, long is almost always better than short on the approach shots.
Put your pride away. Like you said, no one cares. Contrary to my son's opinion, it does not matter how it looks.
That's right.
All that matters
is what the scorecard says at the end.
And this is a great tip. I get you out of here on this. Oliver Horovitz is the host of Caddy Code. ShopWithGolf.com is the website. In bad weather, do as the Scots do. Tell everybody what you should do.
You put your knit hat on top of the golf cap. So golf cap on, Titleist cap on, and then your knit hat on top of it so you cover your ears and you prevent the cap from blowing off.
You can still see that episode of Caddy Codes on Terry Eady at shopwithgolf.com. That's Oliver Horovitz. Hope you also enjoyed revisiting our conversations this week with Matt Corey, Chief Marketing Officer of PGA Tour Superstore, and Brittany Altomare, hero for the American squad and near victor at this year's Solheim Cup. A reminder, should you just be catching the last little bit of the show and wonder what all we've covered today? No worries. Subscribe to the Taking Dead Aim podcast at Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, BPod Studios, Spotify, and all the usual podcast outlets. It will automatically download to the device of your choice. Additionally, great source of constant golf updates, our Facebook page. Be sure to like us on Facebook. Just search Taking Dead Aim. Featured there now. Links to articles on the latest goings on in and around the game. Weather-wise, well, that's going to be dodgy. We got cold, we got wet, but there are windows of opportunity this weekend for teeing it up and letting this game continue to haunt your soul and break your heart. And if you do put a peg in the ground, remember to exhale, swing, pose, and keep it in the short grass. I'm Charlie Nance on Twitter, at @CLT_golf guy, and I'll see you right here next week, Taking Dead Aim, presented by Academy Sports and Outdoors.
BackstageCountry.com, your online home for all things country music. Like most fans of country music, we're excited to learn that Luke Combs was back in the studio working on his next album. We've come up with our list of iconic Luke Combs music videos. Yes, Lovin' On You made the cut. Text Luke to 45911 to see if your favorite made the list on BackstageCountry.com. Text Luke to 45911 and we'll send the link straight to your phone.